You're listening to Your Financial Choices on WDIY Allentown. Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC. To ensure compliance with requirements imposed by the IRS, we inform you that any U.S. federal tax advice contained in this communication is not intended to or to be used for the purpose of avoiding penalties under the Internal Revenue Code or promoting, marketing, or recommending to another party any transaction or matter addressed herein. This show is for educational purposes only. For advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP. That's a Certified Financial Practice, Certified Financial Planner, and an Accredited Estate Planner. And you can see more at yourfinancialchoices.com, and you can listen each and every week on wdiy.org. Welcome to the show. Today is February 13th, 2013. The markets were mixed today. The Dow closing down at 13,982, the NASDAQ up at 3,196, and the S&P at 1520. I'm happy to have you all here. Last week, I discussed the ups and downs of bond investing with my guest, Tom Riddle, CPA, CFP, and President of Valley National Financial Advisors. I want to thank him very much. I think he did a great job of explaining the ins and outs of bond investing. Tonight, it's just you and me, folks. We are going to talk about filing your tax returns, where do you get forms, or maybe where you don't get forms. It's not as easy as you think these days. Who can file? Can we start filing our tax returns yet? Who cannot? And your tax questions. So I am going to give you the phone number because we are live and Andrea is here in the studio to answer your calls. And she will ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without confusion if you're going to talk live on air. And if you are not comfortable talking live on air, you can give your question to Andrea and she will bring it in to me. But I do appreciate live phone calls. Gives me a break from talking and hearing myself. The phone number this evening is 610-758-8810. That is 610-758-8810. So again, tonight we're taking your calls, listeners' questions, in particular about tax questions. I figure tis the season. Let's get started. Let's get going. Everybody file early if you can. We're going to talk about that. So we'll see how we can help you. I think before we talk about whether you can file or not, I think I'd like to talk first about whether or not you even have to file a tax return. I think some people think they need to file a tax return and they, you know, march themselves over to the local, you know, tax business that does tax returns and they charge you, you know, I don't know, $100, $200 to file your tax return. And maybe you don't even need to. And so I'm just going to give you some general guidelines. And this in particular, where I see issues with this are older people, maybe folks who are just living on Social Security, maybe they have a bank account and, you know, get a little interest income. Maybe you even have a little bit of dividend income. And you think you have to file the return because you just have done that every year, year after year. You might not have to. So who must file a 2012 tax return? Some general guidelines. If you're single and you're under age 65, you must file if your gross income is at least $9,750. If you're 65 or older, the gross income must be at least $11,200. So now you're hearing me say that and you're saying, but Lori, you know, my Social Security is $14,000. So I already know I'm over that amount when you say gross income. But folks, that's not the case. When you have Social Security, not all of your Social Security is taxable. So let me give you an example. If you have $100 of interest income and you have $14,000 of Social Security, that Social Security isn't going to be taxed. So it's a little bit of a misnomer, I think, when the IRS or, you know, this publication I'm looking at says gross income. Because when I think gross, I think all of your income, which you would think would be all of your Social Security. But it really almost is what is taxable income a little bit on page one when we're factoring in Social Security. Because there's like a worksheet you have to go through to see if you're going to, if any of your Social Security is going to be taxed. And generally, if the only thing you have is Social Security, that's not going to be income taxable if that's the only thing you have. So you do not have to file a tax return for federal purposes. Now, let's pretend you had something in on your return. I've seen on occasion someone might have $14,000 of Social Security, and they might have taken a distribution from an IRA of $1,000. That, too, isn't going to trigger a filing of a tax return. But let's pretend you had that $1,000 IRA distribution, and you had, like, I don't know, 10% of the $1,000 taken out as withholdings, because in your mind you think, I have taxable income, I have to pay tax. And I've seen people do this, and they have withholdings, and it's $100 withholding. The only way you're going to get that money back is by filing a tax return. Now, it's kind of funny, the psychology of filing tax returns. And again, in particular, I'm kind of focusing on older people who are getting Social Security and maybe don't have a lot of other income. I had a client once who said she loves getting a refund. I told her, if you stop the withholdings, you would never have to file a tax return. She says, that's okay, I like getting the refund. So, you know, to get a $100 refund, just to say you have a refund on your tax return, but to pay someone $100 to do your tax return doesn't make sense. So tonight's just kind of a, what do I want to say, an alert to people. Maybe you're one of those sandwich generation adults who kind of watch out for your parents who are older. Make sure you're asking them. You know, they're still independent. They may still be filing their own tax returns. That's all fine and good, but let's just kind of ask the question, do they really need to continue to file a tax return? Now, let me tell you, the numbers get a lot higher when we're talking about married filing joint. Those are just the numbers I gave you for single. If you're married filing joint and both spouses are under 65, the gross income we're looking at is $19,500. If only one spouse is 65 or older, it's $20,650. If both spouses are 65 or older, the gross income is $21,800. So, again, if it's strictly Social Security and a little bit of other income, they may not have to file. You might need to go through a little worksheet to see if they're required to file. I know that the IRS has some resources on their website, irs.gov, and there's a question section. And I just saw it before I came in tonight that you can, I believe, go through some simple questions and answers in determining whether you have to file or not. So I didn't go through the exercise, but I'm guessing, again, if you're one of those adults who has elderly parents and you're trying to figure out if they have to file a tax return or not, the first alert to you that they may not have to file is if they have not owed taxes in the past year or years. If they've not owed any income taxes, it's time to look at the income on page one of their return to see if they really are required to file. If you're not sure, go on the IRS's website, irs.gov, and type in the search box, do I need to file a tax return? Or I think there's actually a link for frequently asked questions over on the left-hand side of the page. And you can go through this little exercise of answering, I believe, questions to determine if you have to file a tax return or not. There's different amounts for different filing statuses, so you have to be aware of that. Again, if there's Social Security, the Social Security may not be taxable at all. Typically, if you don't have a lot of other income, it wouldn't be. There is a worksheet. There's different thresholds depending on if you're single or married filing joint. A little bit too complicated to go through that exercise right now on the air, but I just wanted to alert you to make sure and determine if you have to file or not. Another class of folks that may not have to file a tax return might be students. Students who earned, you know, under a certain amount of income can use, even if they're claimed as a dependent on their parents' return, they get a little bit of a deduction based on wages, so that if they are single under age 65 and they have earned income greater than $5,950, then they would have to file. But if it's less than that and they don't have any other income, then they wouldn't necessarily have to file. But you also want to go see if the employer withheld any income tax. The only way to get back those income taxes are by filing your return. Having said that, I'm talking about federal returns, and maybe you wouldn't have to file a federal return. Again, typically elderly, typically, you know, students making not a lot of money. But you still probably have to file a Pennsylvania return or even a New Jersey return if you're in New Jersey. Because in Pennsylvania, if you have even $35 of income, they want to see a tax return. You may qualify for special tax forgiveness, but they want you to go through the exercise and the worksheet to determine whether you do qualify for special tax forgiveness. Folks, the phone number this evening, call in. It's going to be a fast, fast show. Call in. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have vinyl albums or 45s on your shelves that are taking up space and gathering dust? Why not donate them for a good cause? WDIY will receive profits from the records, and you will receive a tax deduction. Any condition is accepted. For more information or to arrange for drop-off or pickup, call 610-694-8100 extension 3 or visit WDIY.org.
And welcome back, folks. I'm just making a note. I also want to talk about kitty tax a little bit later here. If you have questions this evening, the lines are open for you, the listener. This is the topic of the show is listeners' questions, so I hope I get a few. You could talk live on air or just give your question to Andrea. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That is 610-758-8810. I wanted to first address if you even need to file a tax return before we talk about can you file it because of timing issues with forms that are available with the IRS. So first I wanted to talk about whether you need to file a tax return, covered that a little bit. But I also wanted to add one piece. When I mentioned about children, they can have earned income and still use a little bit of a standard deduction against that earned income, even though they're claimed as a dependent on their parents' return. If they go over that amount, or if they have unearned income is over $950. So those kids might have to file a tax return. Keep in mind, if your child has more than $950 of unearned income, they may be subject, or you, I should say, may be subject to something called the kiddie tax, that if the tax rate that applies to that amount over $950 is higher based on your tax rates, you may be subject to that. And it's also a little complicated. There's a special form to complete to determine that. Keep in mind that you may be subject to kiddie tax. And if the only reason you would file a tax return for your child is if they have unearned income over $950, there is an option for parents to report the child's income on their own return. So that could be another way to avoid filing a return for a child if you don't otherwise, you know, need to. If it's just because of their unearned income, it's a little bit over $950. If you want to file it on your own return, you can do that. I don't typically have people elect to just do it all on their own return. I typically end up having two returns, the child's, the parents, and we still calculate the kiddie tax based on the parent's rate on the parent's return. All right, so that is that. If you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810. I was just talking with someone the other night about getting tax forms, and it's hard for me to understand that people actually still do kind of manually enter their own tax returns. I know my brother does. He loves to do it. I think it's kind of methodical, and he feels like he's, you know, getting all the right information. And I was just talking to someone again the other night saying the same thing. They like to fill out their own tax return. They don't like paying someone to file it for them, and they don't have a computer at home. So these people do exist. There are people who don't have computers. They're probably much happier in their lives. But anyway, so they're trying to find tax forms. And in the old days, like I think 2 years ago, you could still get the tax return forms from the post office. And I understand that you can't get them from the post office any longer. I think you can still get them from the library, but the library, I was just told by this other person, didn't even have all the forms yet. Because remember, some of the laws changed at the last minute here at the beginning of January. So I don't know if they hadn't planned for that, and then they had to go in edit mode and change everything. So it's taking them a while to get some of the forms out. So if you go to the library and ask for them and they don't quite have them yet, I guess you could just keep checking back. What was really funny to me, though, was that when I went on the IRS's website and typed, you know, where can I get tax forms, I could not find an answer. And I just thought that was the funniest thing. What came up was, where can you file your tax return? And there's probably about 20 different places, because it all depends on if you're paper filing, if you're doing it through the post office or through express mail, different addresses for everything. If I was in charge of the IRS, the first thing I would do is have one address to mail paper tax returns to, and then they can worry about divvying them up rather than having people all over the country sending them all over the country. Because the funny thing about that is, too, is when you get a tax notice, you get a tax notice maybe from Ogden, Utah, and then you have to send your response to, you know, Cincinnati, and I'm making up these addresses. But it gets kind of crazy, and I think that makes it a little bit more confusing. Maybe that's why they can't get these tax forms in order. But they did announce that the majority of people probably can go ahead and file their returns now electronically. They did alert us, though, that refunds are going to take a little longer than they used to. There has become an increased problem with identity theft through, whether it's tax returns or what, I'm not sure how people are getting this information, but folks are filing tax returns fraudulently for refunds quite often on people who have died. So you also have to be very careful what's advertised in the newspaper. But the IRS, in trying to deal with this, is taking, I guess, extra steps and taking a little bit more time in processing tax returns before they automatically refund amounts. So refunds are going to take a little bit longer. So majority of people probably can begin filing their tax returns electronically or paper. The IRS will accept them. But there are some that cannot file yet. We did just have one that was recently released, and that was on February 10th, a Form 4562 for depreciation. So that's basically anybody who has a business, typically, and has equipment, office furniture, cars, that kind of thing. If they're depreciating them, that is reported on a Form 4562. And those just became available for electronic filing on February 10th. That was because there was a lot of changes in that Affordable Taxpayer Relief Act that affected depreciation. So they got that all updated. That was available February 10th. February 14th, tomorrow, happy Valentine's Day, the education credit form is going to be available, and that's Form 8863. That is for folks who claim the American Opportunity Credit or the Lifetime Learning Credit. So the Form 8863 should be ready to go. So if you've been waiting for that, you can move forward. There's lots of other tax forms that are delaying the processing of tax returns, and I'll go over some of those when we come back from this next break. Those forms won't be accepted by the IRS until the first week of March. So we're still talking, you know, 2-3 weeks away for, you know, some people to be able to file their tax returns. So I'll cover some of those when I get back from this next break. If you have questions this evening, I'd love a phone call. And if you're not comfortable talking on air, you can give your question to Andrea. She'll bring it in. If you're comfortable talking on air, she'll put you through. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert, and we are talking taxes tonight. If you have questions, you can give us a call, 610-758-8810. The topic tonight is listeners' questions. And in the meantime, I'm kind of going over some highlights of tax filing, and I am also going to go over some very frequent questions I have and kind of give you some ins and outs of a few things. But the topic tonight, listeners' questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Next week, I'm having a guest. We're talking about long-term care planning, so I'm not talking about income taxes next week, and we're going to be, you know, mostly through February by then. We did have a call come in off air, and they asked if I could discuss 1040 filing for recent graduates. So that's your federal income tax form filing for recent graduates, I assume recent college graduates, and deductions for student loans, 401ks, etc., and how to maximize your refund. They also asked how to find a CPA and how much you should pay. Well, one thing I might ask this person to think about is, as a recent graduate and someone kind of getting into the working world, I think there's a huge appreciation for what's involved in your financial life by preparing the tax return yourself. So one thing I might want someone to consider is kind of figuring some of this out. Maybe you could be one of those people who prints off the forms and does it by hand. You'll see it's like a horrible job, really, because it can be quite complicated or seem quite complicated if you don't know your way around. But you can also learn a lot about preparing taxes and kind of some of the things that are going to affect you as you go on in your own financial life. There is software out there that you can buy. There are some colleges that will have their accounting students maybe prepare income tax returns. You could always tap that as a resource if you, you know, don't have the money to pay or do it yourself. Software is cheaper too than a tax preparer. I don't want to say a tax preparer is going to get you more deductions than you might on your own, but they might. And they could also alert you to some other things to pay attention to. So if you find that you really want to start doing things maybe the right way and you want to hire a professional, how much should you pay? It kind of depends. Certain accounting firms or tax preparation services will charge based on the form. And it doesn't always end up being cheap that way. So you really have to kind of do your homework ahead of time. The gentleman the other night who told me he wanted to go find his own forms and do it himself, he didn't, because he couldn't find them, he decided to go to one of these tax preparation places. And they told him, I think in the end it was going to cost him $250. And he couldn't believe it. He said, I'm a very simple person. I have like a W-2 and like a child. That's it. And I'm not sure. I think they thought he might have had extra things, I don't know. But you've got to be careful if you're paying based on the form. You could pay based on time it takes to prepare the return, and then it probably depends on who's preparing the return. If you have a CPA, they're going to cost more than an EA, an enrolled agent. An enrolled agent might cost more than a staff person at an accounting firm who's preparing tax returns. They might be more than the RTRPs, the registered tax return preparers that the IRS was just trying to register. So you want to ask the questions. If you're doing it on the form, how much is it per form? If you're doing it with a preparer, how much is it for their time, if they're charging based on time? I think Andrea had mentioned that you asked as well about if some tax preparers work on commission. I think there are some tax businesses that might pay their preparers some, you know, hourly rate, but then they get money based on how many, you know, forms they file or the cost of the tax preparation. I'm not sure if that's still going on, but I know it was at one time. So, caller, I don't have a name, but let's go back to a minute for your recent graduate. What can you do as far as your own tax return? I want you to keep a couple things in mind. If you just graduated, let's say you graduated in 2012, there could be a chance that your parents might still claim you as a dependent. You have to kind of look at the facts and circumstances for the final year that you graduate, because if you were a student under age 24 and you were in school for at least 5 years and your parents provided more than half your support, your parents might still want to claim you. And there may be reasons for that. They may get a better tax write-off by claiming you. They may be eligible for certain education credits, like the American Opportunity Credit, that could give them a credit of $2,500. So you want to coordinate with your parents, in particular the year you graduate, to say, okay, are the facts and circumstances such that mom and dad, you're going to claim me, or mom and dad, are the facts and circumstances such that I'm going to claim myself? Whoever gets to claim the student slash, you know, now independent person, they would get to claim the education credits, except I believe the student. The education credits follow the dependent exemption. There are special rules for students, though. I think if you're 24, I don't think you get the refundable part of the education credit. So you want to be careful of that. You may not get the refundable piece of that credit. Because one of the things that happens with students is sometimes when you graduate, maybe you only worked half the year, so your income isn't that much. They don't want the student claiming themselves getting the education credit that maybe the parents would not have gotten because the parents' income was too high. So they have special rules around the education credits for someone under 24, and watch out for that. There is a deduction for student loans. Student loans also go for whomever is paying it. So, caller, if you are the student and you are paying your own student loan, then if you are a single filer and your adjusted gross income, which is your income on page one, is less than $60,000, then you could get a deduction for student loan interest. It's not the whole amount, though. It's limited. And I just don't remember the amount off the top of my head. I don't know if it's $2,500 or $1,250. I'd have to look it up. But it is limited. You don't get all the student loan interest. You get what you pay in that year, subject to limitations. There is a phase out for that if you're single, between $60,000 and $75,000. So you also asked about a 401k. Let's say you're at $65,000. You're in the phase out of the student loan deduction. You have some money. You're good, good at saving because you learned to live on no money while you were a student. So now you're working and you're a good saver. One of the things you can do to lower your page one income is put money into the retirement account, as you mentioned, a 401k. 401ks are especially attractive if your employer matches what you put in. The best, you know, advice I can give anybody is get that match. Of course, unless you're, you know, in credit card debt and all kinds of stuff like that. But that match is like free money from your employer if you have it. So you could put money into a 401k. It reduces your taxable wages today. And it starts your saving in retirement. So you might think, well, that would be a good way if you're going to be eligible for more deductions or more credits, education credits, that kind of thing. But I want you to stop and pause and think, well, maybe it's not always the best way to go. You have to start thinking, now that you're a graduate, maybe you're in a 10% tax bracket. Maybe you're in a 15% tax bracket. Maybe it doesn't make sense for you to put money into a 401k and get the tax deferral on it because you're only paying 10% in taxes. So one of the questions you had said is, how can you maximize your refund? Well, if you lower your income, yes, you can maximize your refund, but maybe that might not necessarily make sense if you're in such a low tax bracket and you expect in the future to be in a professional position and you're going to be in a high tax bracket, like a 25% tax bracket. Then you might want to say, should I look at alternatives like a Roth IRA? So when we come back, I'll finish up that conversation, but we are at a break. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back to the show, folks. It's going fast. If you have questions, give us a call, 610-758-8810. Sorry I'm talking so fast, but I'm a little hyper tonight, especially when I talk about taxes. I get a little hyper and want to mention that tonight is the night to call in with questions if you have them. Next week, I'm not going to be talking about income taxes necessarily. I'm talking about long-term care planning. Let me just wrap up this last question from my recent graduate, and then I want to I had another off-air call from Robin Easton. I don't know if it's related to this last call or not. It's interesting because it kind of dovetails into it. So my first caller's question about discussing recent graduates, bottom line, talk to your parents, see who's claiming whom, what are the facts and circumstances of your situation, who's claiming the dependent, you, the recent graduate, or the parents. Then once you determine who's getting the dependency exemption, parents or student, then you have to say what is available to both of us. Were there education expenses that might qualify for the education credits that might be available, or tuition and fees deductions, or lifetime learning, or student loan interest? Education credits follow the dependency status for the student. Student loan interest follows whoever paid it, or whose responsibility it is and who paid it. So watch for that. And keep in mind, there are ways to lower your income. You want to look at what tax bracket you're in and what taxes you're saving. Does it make sense to put money into a 401k that you're not going to be able to touch till you're 59 and a half? And let's say you're 21 now. Are you really not going to touch it for like 40 years? Awesome if you know you won't touch it for 40 years. But maybe you might want to think of what other alternatives you might have. If you're in a very low tax bracket today, you might want to look at something called a Roth IRA. When you put money into a Roth, you as a student, you know, at young age, 21, you could put $5,000 into a Roth. And the beauty of that is you can always tap that original contribution if you need it. And then any earnings grow tax-free, and you don't take those earnings out until like never or till you retire, and then it wouldn't be taxable because you're not using before tax money for it. But if you needed to tap that Roth, you could get to your original contributions. You put money in the 401k, you cannot get to those contributions without income tax consequences and a 10% penalty. So there's advantages to 401ks and there are advantages to Roth. You want to look at what tax bracket you're in. Do you really need to save income taxes at that particular rate? And I hope that helps my first caller make some decisions. But I love the questions because they are really thinking and they're going to be on a good path if they think like that already at this young age, being a recent graduate. Now I have a call from Robin Easton. He relocated to Pennsylvania on June 5th, 2012 from Michigan. Yay, Michigan. That's where I'm from. Kalamazoo area, Pawpaw, Rob, if you're interested. Anyway, Rob says his son is a full-time college student in Pennsylvania. His son worked in Pennsylvania starting in May, but his permanent address was still Michigan, and that was until June. Does he pay Michigan or Pennsylvania tax for that time? He was working in Pennsylvania but still living in Michigan, and he also worked over spring break in Michigan for about a week. Rob, what's going to happen for all of you in 2012 is you are part-year taxpayers. So your residency status for all of you was January 1st to June 5th when you moved to Pennsylvania. So your son was a Michigan resident until June 5th. He had income at his spring break was in Michigan. He was a Michigan resident. That is going to be an easy one because the W-2 probably even shows Michigan. What's going to be a little bit harder for you to figure out is when he started working in Pennsylvania in May, what you could do is pull out pay stubs. But the employer in Pennsylvania may have assumed he was a Pennsylvania resident because he might have given his college address, which was Pennsylvania. So the employer probably withheld Pennsylvania tax. But technically, he was a Michigan resident, and you're going to file a part-year return through June 5th for him, and you have to allocate the Michigan wages while earned in Pennsylvania up through June 5th. Okay, so what will end up happening is those Pennsylvania wages, he might have even had Pennsylvania withholdings. You're going to probably, if he ends up even owing any income tax in Michigan, what would happen is you'd file a Pennsylvania return and allocate the wages up until June 5th to Michigan, anything after June 5th to Pennsylvania, and look at pay stubs. That's the simplest way I can tell you. It's a little bit complicated for me to say on the radio, but you basically allocate it. Try to use pay stubs. Might be the easiest things. If we're talking $10, I don't know if it's going to matter. You know, if you earn $10 in that period, I don't know. I might just throw it all in Pennsylvania. But look at pay stubs and allocating it. But yes, part year for both of you. Folks, if you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. So we're talking a little bit about tax forms. Where do you find them? Oh, the library. You can print them online if you have a computer. For those folks who don't have computers, it's a little bit more difficult. The IRS does not send out those forms anymore. In fact, a lot of states aren't even sending out forms anymore. I know for Pennsylvania, I think you can do a telefile. You can do it over the telephone. I know you can, I think, go online even and do electronic filing with Pennsylvania. Not sure because, you know, I don't do it that way. A lot of the local municipalities too, which now go through like a Berkheimer tax collector or a Keystone collection agency collector, they have online filing for your local returns, so you don't have to fill out a paper anymore. And if you did do that last year, and then you wouldn't get a booklet or a tax form this year. Some people were kind of surprised they didn't get their local tax return in the mail. Well, they did it on the phone, they did it on the computer. They electronically filed. So Berkheimer, Keystone, I don't believe they sent out paper forms this year if you filed electronically. We talked about the IRS is open for electronic filing now, and people can file their tax returns other than a few. There's some delays. The Education Credit Form 8863 will be available tomorrow, so you can electronically file tomorrow. Some of the ones that aren't going to be ready until the first week of March are certain forms that won't mean anything to a lot of people. But let me kind of go over some of the more used ones, and that is Form 3800. It's general business credit. A lot of different credits flow through that form. So Form 3800 might not sound familiar to any of you, but a lot of other credits flow through the general business credit form. That's not going to be available, and it's probably not going to be available because these other ones aren't. So there's the residential energy credit. That's Form 5695. For folks who maybe didn't take energy credits in the past, they might qualify for some. That's, you know, been more limited than it was in the past. And if you've taken credits in the past, you might not apply because it's cumulative. Credit for increasing research activities, that might apply to some people. Form 8582, it's the passive activity loss limitations. And that sounds really complicated and big, but you know what? It's more common than people realize. That's for people who have rental properties. So if you're someone who owns a building, a house, apartment building, you file a Schedule E for rental properties. And when you file a Schedule E, if you have losses on those rental properties, there's an additional form that has to be filed called the passive activity loss limitations, because you have to see if any of the losses you have on your rental properties are going to be limited. So that is a lot more common than people realize. So if you have rental properties, you have to wait a little bit longer. Qualified adoption expenses, people have to wait. Domestic production activities deduction. You say, what, Lori? What's that? Domestic production activities deduction, Form 8903. That doesn't sound like, you know, most of us would have that. That's, you know, like businesses, maybe. Sounds kind of complicated. Well, if you have a partnership interest in maybe, you know, some of these, oil partnerships, gas partnerships, they probably have domestic production activity credits. So those would flow through to you on a K-1. So if you're a partner in a limited partnership as an investment opportunity, you may have to wait for that form. Granted, if you have losses on that partnership, I don't think it's going to matter because the credit would only apply if there's income. There's an energy efficient home credit. That's not available yet. I also wanted to point out that if you go surfing on the internet looking for different kinds of credits, you've got to be careful and not be misled when you see something that sounds like it might apply to you. There is a credit called the Energy Efficient Appliance Credit. And that is a question I get year after year after year. Oh, I bought an energy efficient washer. I bought an energy efficient dryer. Several years ago, I think some of the utility companies were offering credits. And I think Pennsylvania was offering credits to some extent for energy efficient appliances. This credit is not that, folks. This energy efficient appliance credit is for manufacturers. So just be careful when you hear people talking about different things, or you see it on the internet, or you see it on a TV show. Just make sure you understand how something might apply to you. Okay. The phone number this evening, 610-758-8810. If you have questions, if you have questions about taxes or anything like that, retirement accounts, I am here. Andrea is here. We are live. You can call and ask your question live on air, or give your question to Andrea and she will bring it in and I will do my best to answer it. So again, the phone number is 610-758-8810. My throat is getting dry. I need someone to call in and ask a question. Oh, they're coming, Andrea says. They're coming. Oh, another off-air. We have Rich from Allentown. He said 2011 school taxes weren't paid until 2012. Can I deduct 2011 and 2012 school tax payments on my 2012 return? Yes, Rich, you can. What happens is we are cash basis taxpayers. So if you did not pay your school taxes in 2011, then you were right not to take a deduction in 2011 for those. So you paid them in 2012 and you also paid your 2012 taxes. Here's the only little caveat, Rich, if you're still listening, hopefully, is you have to be careful because if you paid penalties and interest on paying late on those real estate taxes, you cannot take a deduction for the penalties and interest. You can only take a deduction for the real estate taxes. So when you pull out that 2011 tax bill, look for the amount that was due without penalty and interest. That's the amount that you're going to get the deduction for. And same thing would apply for your 2012. So great question. We have Claire in Center Valley. She said last year she had a nanny for her daughter, paid her about $11,000 for 2012. Do we need to send her a 1099 or do anything on our return to record that? We have a federal tax ID for her. Claire, yes, you're in a household employee situation, a nanny tax situation, and there is a Schedule H, which you file with your tax return. What happened, Claire, is I think we might be a little behind the bullet here. There was some additional information that you probably should have been filing during the year. I am not an expert on the nanny tax or the household employee. I have someone else do that in the firm. So, but bottom line, because of the amount of money that you paid your nanny, you are in the required filing phase for that. There's unemployment tax you have to pay. There's Social Security tax that has to be paid. And why it's good to kind of get in front of that and know what you're getting into when you start this situation is you're paying your nanny. And usually what you need to know is you say to the nanny, do you want me to withhold and pay, you know, your federal tax or your state tax? Maybe they don't. That's fine. Then you don't have to withhold that. If they want you to withhold that, then you might have to withhold that from the pay and give them a net paycheck. And then you have to submit the taxes like through these e-tide programs where you submit the payments electronically. So there's certain payments that you do that way. But if you're not required to do that, you still would be subject to paying their FICA tax, their Social Security tax. That you can pay with your income tax return, and you do that through the Schedule H that you file where you report that income. So when you say you have a federal tax ID for her, two things might have happened. You need a Social Security number for her because maybe you're going to give her a W-2. 1099 is an independent contractor. That would be if she had her own business. You're not controlling her. She's very independent. She has, you know, maybe she has other children in her care. You don't control her hours, etc. That's an independent contractor. But if she's in your home and she's treated like an employee, you tell her the hours and all of that, then she's a household employee, and you need an ID number, an employer ID number, to fill out the required forms for the unemployment, et cetera. And that is an EIN. So the federal tax ID number you're talking about, it might be that. Jeff, can we skip the next break, or do you need to? Okay. Yeah, we'll keep going because I hear other calls coming in. So, Claire, you got to get your arms around that. I'm sorry I can't give you more details. It's a little complicated on the air. It's not easy, and you want to make sure you're doing it right. You don't want to get in trouble with that. So thanks for calling for that. We have Sean on air. Can I get him? Sean, are you here?
Yes, hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for taking my call.
Good. How can I help you?
I had a quick question about what is and is not a acceptable or accredited institution for receiving tax or applying for the tax reimbursement for educational expenses?
Yeah, there's several education credits that are available out there, and there's one called the American Opportunity Credit, and that applies to students who are still within their four-year education. Are you talking about like a two-year college or a four-year college, or are you talking about like a technical institute?
I actually participated in CELTA training program for a month. It was through Cambridge University, and it was for becoming an ESL teacher.
English as a second language. Is that what you mean? ESL, did you say?
To teach English as a second language.
Yeah. So did you already have a degree?
Yes, I already had a degree, 4-year degree.
Okay. There is something called the Lifetime Learning Credit. It's available for unlimited number of years for both degree and non-degree programs. I would have to probably check a little bit more on that, but you could Google it. Lifetime Learning Credit. Check for that one. There is, let me see, there's also a tuition and fees deduction. Let me see. Undergraduate and graduate. So I don't know if the, don't know. Lifetime learning credit is undergraduate and graduate, and so is tuition and fees deduction. So we would probably just want to make sure tuition and fees, trying to see if I can find something quick as far as the eligibility goes. The program, you said Cambridge. What's the program again? What was that?
It's called CELTA, C-E-L-T-A. It's a worldwide certification program for teaching English as a second language, and it's run and operated through Cambridge University.
Okay. If it was just a certification program, I'm not sure I would say it would qualify. What I would probably do is call Cambridge or contact them and ask them if this is like an accredited program that would qualify for education credits. See if they would be able to tell you that.
Okay.
Okay, that's the best I can do. It's kind of hard to know for sure.
Thanks okay. for your help.
Good question. Thanks. Have a good night. We have on line four, we have Rich. Rich, are you there?
Yes.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Good. How can I help you?
I have a question about moving expenses.
Okay.
I lived in Harrisburg and had to take a temporary job in New Jersey.
Okay.
And then for a year, and then last year I moved to the Lehigh Valley. So I'm married and my family stayed in Harrisburg, but I worked in New Jersey temporarily and rented an apartment during the week there. And I'm wondering if I'm able to deduct moving expenses. It seems like I'm not, but I just want to see what you have to say about that.
Well, first of all, you moved from Harrisburg to the Lehigh Valley, so that's the one moving expense. What about the temporary expenses in New Jersey? Was that was just kind of for your convenience because you were working in New Jersey, right? That wasn't
that's correct.
That wasn't a requirement of your employer, so I would not think that would be deductible. As far as moving from Harrisburg to the Lehigh Valley, I think the only my only concern there would be the time that might have elapsed. How long was the time from Harrisburg to the move in the Lehigh Valley?
Well, we moved to the Lehigh Valley soon after I took the job in Harrisburg.
Okay.
So I had a job in New Jersey.
Yeah.
But I filled in taxes as living in Harrisburg.
Okay.
And now this year, I'm filling in taxes living in Bethlehem.
Okay.
But I don't know whether I can deduct the expenses because the distance from Harrisburg to New Jersey is farther than the distance from Harrisburg to my new job.
Right. But from Harrisburg to the Lehigh Valley, is the job in Harrisburg or the job's in Lehigh Valley?
Lehigh Valley.
It is in Lehigh Valley. So it's more than like the 30, I think there's certain... Oh, what are the distance requirements? 50 miles. So to deduct moving expenses, the distance between the taxpayer's new job location and former house must be at least 50 miles more than the distance between the old job location and the former house. Did you follow that?
Right. So
the new job location.
That's why I'm not sure.
You don't think Harrisburg and Lehigh Valley are 50 miles apart?
They are.
Yep.
But the job I had right before moving to Lehigh Valley was in New Jersey, and that's, you know, let's say that's 100 miles, and it's 70 miles to, from Harrisburg to the New Jersey job was 100 miles.
Right.
The job from Harrisburg to Lehigh Valley is 70 miles.
Right. You're still over the 50 miles test, I believe.
But it says more than 50 from, isn't it more than 50 from
The distance between the old job location and the former house. So your Harrisburg house.
Yeah, the former job location and the Harrisburg house was, say, 100 miles.
Right.
And so now the current location and the Harrisburg house is 70 miles. It's less than that.
Oh, I see. You're saying like 30. I'd have to draw it out, and I didn't draw it out while you were speaking, so I apologize. But there is the distance test. The other item that I would say, though, is if the New Jersey was just temporary, if it wasn't actually, I guess what made it temporary, was it really temporary or was it
It only lasted a year, and we knew it was not going to last very long.
Okay, that might be a factor. So you want to take that into consideration. The other thing you want to look at, the time test, moving costs are deductible only if the taxpayer works as a full-time employee at the new location for at least 39 weeks in the 12-month period. So you want to make sure you do that. Mm-hmm. But combine two jobs. If the employee leaves the first job without meeting the time requirements and gets a second job in the same general location, time spent on the two jobs may be combined to meet the 39-week rule. I thought that was going to be the moving. I think we have to look at facts and circumstances a little bit here. Let me just see if I see anything else. Moving expenses must be incurred within 1 year from the date a person first reports to work. So you want to make sure you moved within 1 year from the date you first reported to work. If it's more than 1 year, the start of the job and the move, expenses are not deductible unless circumstances prevented the move within that time. So I think you should draw it out. And I apologize when you were telling me, sit down, figure it out. And I think it would require a little bit more research on that temporary living or the temporary job. Okay. I'm not going to tell you you wouldn't qualify for it. I think you need to kind of lay out the facts and circumstances and the locations a little bit better than I can visualize on the air here.
So there might be a possibility if the first job is somehow known as a temporary job?
Well, I'm wondering. It's something sticking in my head about that.
Okay.
Okay. So
you know where I would look to find that information?
Well, you want to get the instructions out for the moving expense form, which is Form 3903. Form 3903, and just kind of start fiddling around with that.
Okay.
And I'm just going on instinct here. I just can't... I can't pull that out without looking up a little bit more information. So I appreciate the call, though. Good luck with that. I hope it works out for you.
Thank you.
Okay, take care. Have a good night. We are taking listeners' questions tonight. Andrea looks like she's frantically writing, and I'm trying to get, like, how many more calls came in? One, two. Anybody live on air?
No.
Okay. We have some off-air questions hopefully we can still get to tonight. I had wanted to, while Andrea is getting those questions for me, I wanted to go over a couple things, like what kind of income is taxable. People are always asking me, they got an inheritance, they got a gift, and they think it's income taxable. So someone gives you like $100,000, and people say, oh, is that income taxable to me? Well, not necessarily, and maybe even probably not. If they give you a $100,000 IRA that they never paid tax on, that's something called income in respect of a decedent. Yes, that would be income taxable to you depending on when you take it out. If you take a full distribution, it's going to be subject to income tax. If you put the $100,000 in a beneficiary IRA, it's only going to be income taxable as you take the money out. But if mom and dad died, their estate was settled, and there was no income, that you sold a house, let's say, and there's $100,000 after the sale of the house, and they hand that to you, that is an inheritance that's principal. It's not income taxable. Typically, what will happen in an estate, if there was any income tax consequences in the estate, the attorney, the executor, would file an estate income tax return, and upon distributing money to you, they will let you know if any of it is income taxable. So if there was $100 of interest in the estate and $1,000 of legal fees, those legal fees offset the income, so there's no income tax consequence to you. If there's $10,000 of interest income and $1,000 legal fee, there's $9,000 of interest income net, and you're the beneficiary of everything, then you might end up getting that income tax consequence. We had a caller call in. Free resource for income tax preparation. The Community Action Committee of the Lehigh Valley offers the Volunteer Income Tax Assistance Program for income under $51,000 for elderly, disabled, etc. They have locations in Allentown, Bethlehem, Easton, Trexlertown, and Penn Argyl. and to help prepare your income tax return. So that was very nice from Alyssa in Bethlehem to mention the free resource for income tax preparation. Again, the Community Action Committee of the Lehigh Valley offers volunteer income tax assistance program for income under $51,000, elderly and disabled. So thank you, Alyssa, for calling in with that information. Folks, you know, tax season's going to be for another 8 weeks. So we will definitely talk about income tax more. I thank all the people who called in tonight. I apologize to Rich for not getting more details on those moving expenses. Wish I could follow the moves and the miles a little bit better. So I hope you can, by looking at Form 3903, get through that. I thank all these people who called in. Now that I'm looking at that, we had lots of calls tonight. Really appreciate it. We will do another show like this probably in a couple more weeks. Next week, I have Darla Hively on from Senior Solutions, and we are going to talk about care management, finding, you know, care options for your parents. So there's some or people who need assisted living care management. We're out of time. Pay attention. Be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week. Thanks, everybody.